The following sermon is from East Haven Baptist Church in Kalispell, Montana. It's our hope and prayer that through this message you'll have an encounter with Jesus. If you'd like to know more about us, go to easthaven.org.
We continue in our look at Jesus' sermon. He is preaching to us, and we're looking at his sermon to us, the Sermon on the Mount, in our series Elevate. And I have to tell you, as the spotlight of Jesus has shined so brightly upon our hearts in regards to our motives and our ambitions and our thoughts and our values, and I'm increasingly grateful for the grace of God as we walk through this sermon. I don't know if you are. I hope that's the same place you're in as we continue this sermon. And he shines light on the deep recesses of our hearts that it causes us to be grateful for his grace. Because as we are confronted by the truth, as we're confronted by the truth that we see in this sermon, we are we come face to face with something that's difficult for us, which is we fall so short. Don't we? The standard that Jesus has, this kingdom standard that we get from the king, we hear of the standard, we see the standard, and we realize, man, we fall so short. I fall so short. And our response can be one of two things. We can disregard it and live in denial, which kind of feels good for a while, if we're just really honest. There's something that feels good about just, I'm going to pretend like I didn't hear that, or I'm going to say that this belongs to somebody else and doesn't belong to me, and I'm just going to live there. But that just for a short while, but it leaves us out of real fellowship with the king, doesn't it? It leaves us outside of what real kingdom life is about. So we could live in denial, or we can take what we hear and we can confess the shortcomings of our lives and mourn it, and from a place of being broken in spirit, receive the blessings of the King as he works in our life to change us. That's our hope. That's my hope, is that we're in that place. You know, the searching spotlight of the King, of Jesus, is powerful and effective, isn't it? That searching spotlight is his word. Because it's words, that light gets cast down, and it's powerful and it's effective because it's so accurate. I mean, it lands right there, boom, and it just, there's no trying to find the target. It just hits, and it's because the source of all truth is wielding the spotlight. The source of all truth, the one who knows the hearts of men, is wielding the spotlight. And I'll tell you, it's a dangerous thing. It's a dangerous thing when we are the holders of the spotlight. It's a dangerous thing when we decide, okay, I'm going to take the spotlight now and I'm going to do a little shine in myself here. Because here's what inevitably happens. What inevitably happens is we have this tendency from within our flesh, right? The flesh side of us, our natural tendency is for us to take that spotlight and shine it all over on people around us. But when it comes to us, we hit that dimmer switch pretty quickly, don't we? I call it, it's like a binocular syndrome. Binocular syndrome. What we do is we get out the binoculars, right, and we zoom in. Whoa. And it gets a little uncomfortable, doesn't it? It's like, oh, Pastor Joey, hello there. Wow, I see that. And so I look, and I'm like shining it all, and I'm looking at all the details of you guys and what's wrong with you guys and everything that you've got going on, and I can see it and highlight it, and like, it's my son. I could camp out there for a long time, right? But when it comes to us, you know what we do? When it comes to us, we flip it over. Ever flipped it over? Ever flipped and looked through backwards, right? Like, I can't even see you from here. This is the side we show on ourselves. This is the side that we show on ourselves. And I think we have that tendency. And Jesus speaks in his sermon. The king warns us tonight about judging others. And his warning is all all about the order of things, really. The order of things, to cast the spotlight on ourselves first, looking closely at our own heart first. See, that kind of attention will inevitably deal with any pride that's going on in here. If I turn my focus in on myself first, with the right use of the binoculars, then I'm going to see all these things, and I'm going to realize, oh, and before I ever deal with what's going on out here, before I ever deal with Brandon's stuff, I really need to deal with my stuff. And when I deal with my stuff, that breaks down the pride, it breaks down all the things that would get in the way, and it positions me and positions you in the best way to help our brothers out with their stuff. It's all about the order of things. Let's look what our passage says. Anybody here like wanted to like get up and walk out as soon as you heard the passage being read? You know, I was like, oh great, talking about judging, let's leave. I hope not, but this is one of those passages that just lands on us because we deal with judging all the time. We do. We deal with it all the time. We run into this all the time, and so I'm so grateful for the opportunity to speak on this. Verse 1 says, "Do not judge so that you won't be judged." We love this verse, don't we? We love this verse. It's like, well, I'm going to remember this one. This is one of mine. I got this memorized. When do you hear this verse? Or maybe you don't hear it this way, but you hear it, "Judge not, lest ye be judged," right? It's, we have this verse in our minds and in our heads. When is it that we hear about this verse? When is it that we find ourselves or other people quoting this verse, usually? It's usually when we want to pass on our behavior, isn't it? It's usually when we don't want to be held accountable for something. Somebody has pointed something out in our life. They're talking about, hey, you know what? I see this. You need to change that, right? And we're just like, ha ha, judge not, lest ye be judged. And we hold on to that thing. And we use it like a weapon to protect us, a shield to protect us. But really what we're doing is looking for a way to stay camped out on the things that should be changing in our life. You know, even the world uses this verse. This is one of the verses that the world loves to throw at who? At us. You know, the church takes a stand for something, right? Then you'll hear somebody from the world and they'll say, even your own Bible says, don't judge or you're going to be judged. Judge not, lest ye be judged. And so it's a verse that is very familiar. And I think it's really important for us to understand what Jesus is saying here. So what is this verse saying? What's the point of the king? And if there was ever a verse that was a great example for the need for context, it's this verse. You can pluck this verse out, use it however you want to, but that's not Jesus' intent. That's not his point. And so we got to grab this in context because he, the king, the preacher of this sermon, imagine this, he lets us know what he means when he says, don't judge, lest you be judged. So let's talk about that. Jesus says, don't judge. Literally, the word there is an interesting word. It's literally... stop judging, and the word is an interesting word in that it can mean several things in the Bible. It can be translated, it's like translated like 15 different words in the Bible. It can mean from choosing and picking and discerning all the way over to the other end of the spectrum where it means like this judgmental condemnation. And it can mean all these different words in between. And so we need to understand, what is it that Jesus is saying here? What is the word that he's using here? Jesus says, don't judge. It literally means stop judging. Stop judging. It's in the tense. It's like this ongoing thing. And here's what the king is doing. He is looking at hearts of men, and he already sees this is going on. The way he says this implies that this kind of judging is going on a continual basis in the people he's talking to. So he says, stop judging this way. And so what way does he mean for them to stop judging? Does that mean he means to stop discerning? Stop holding one another accountable? Stop deciding what is good and what is bad, what is holy and what is evil? Is that what he is saying? I don't think so. I don't think so. And the context would reveal this and will reveal this to us. But all you have to do is read further in this chapter, and you see that Jesus doesn't mean that. Because in verse 15, well, we'll talk about next week. In verse 15, he says, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing. And then he says this. He says, you will know them by their what? By their fruit. What does that require? Requires some discernment. Requires some judging, doesn't it? You have to be able to decide. Ooh, that fruit. I know what that fruit is. Oh, I know what that fruit is. It requires discernment. He's not saying just stop discerning things. He's not saying stop choosing things. Paul says the same thing. He says the same thing to the church of Corinth in 1 Corinthians chapter 2. Look what it says in verse 15. The spiritual person, however, can evaluate everything, yet he himself cannot be evaluated by anyone. That word evaluate, that word, same word as judge in our passage here. Spiritual person judges everything. Paul also says in 1 Thessalonians 5, 20 through 21, it says, don't despise prophecies, but test all things and hold on to what? To what is good. Hold on to what is good. What does that require? This requires discernment. It requires judging of what's good and what's not good. So Jesus isn't telling us to just be okay with everything. Live and let live. Don't decide anything's good and don't decide anything's bad. Just live your life. I hate this phrase, but I'm going to use it. You do you. Ah. That's not what Jesus is saying, is it? It's not. And we'll find this out more as we look further in our passage. Let's look at what kind of judging Jesus wants us to stop. As he looks into the heart of the people around us, he says, stop this kind of judging. Look what he says in verse 2. He says, for the judgment you use will be judged. You will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. That's a great verse. Jesus clarifies what he means in verse 2. From verse 1 when he says, lest you be judged or you're going to be judged. And he kind of clarifies a little bit more on that in this verse here. He says, with the judgment you use, it will be used on you. Here's what he's saying. The way you use judgment on others, it will be used on you. Or put in another way, the heart you have behind the judgment is going to be the same heart behind the judgment that comes your way. The heart. The heart. There he is again. He's talking about the heart issues. Is there any surprise that Jesus is talking about the heart? I don't imagine there is, because he's been talking about the heart. He's been focused on our heart. This entire Sermon on the Mount, he goes to where? He goes to our heart. And so he's going to the heart about judgment as well. And he's like, I see how you're judging. I see the heart behind your judgment. Stop. Stop. There's a kind of judgment that Jesus wants us to have. And there's a kind of judgment that he doesn't. And it's about where the heart is when it comes to judging. He sees the heart. He's like, I see you're judging, but I see a malicious heart behind your judgment. I see that malicious heart. You're having this critical, fault-finding spirit. You're judging from this place of feeling morally superior to the people that you're judging. You're judging, you're coming to these condemning conclusions about the people that you're around. It's the heart that Jesus is concerned for. He's like, stop judging in such a way. This isn't the kingdom way. He says, you will be measured with the same measurement you measure others. If there was ever something that should be a goosebump producing verse for us, it's this. Think about it. Think about how that works in your life and in my life. We're walking around. We see somebody. They do something. They look a certain way. They have something going on in their life. And we pull out our measuring tape and the standard that we've created is like, this is what real Christians are like. And we have this personal standard that really fits us because it is based off of us. And we hold that tape up to them and they're like, nope. You're falling short. You do not measure up. So we start condemning them. We start having these hasty critical judgments, these senses of superiority. But the problem with that is that we're measuring and we're judging people around us with insufficient information. Because who here can look into the heart of somebody else? Who here knows the path somebody else has walked, the heart that they have inside of them to explain the way they are, why they are the way they are, or why they talk the way they talk, or why they choose the way they choose? Who here can look into the heart of people? Nobody can. So when we pull our measuring tape and we make these hasty conclusions about people's motivations and what they're about and all this kind of stuff, we're using a faulty measuring device. And Jesus says, stop it. Stop it. Man, we will hold up this measuring tape, which is my standard for what is right, and be like, no, you don't measure up, therefore it must be a rebel. You're a rebel. Maybe you don't use the word rebel. I use it sometimes. Sometimes I use it on you. With a faulty measuring thing, it's like, oh, rebellious heart. Right? Rebellious. We'll be like, you're unholy. They're up to no good. Can't be a real believer. They're offensive to God, irresponsible people, and all these things. And you don't even have to say them out loud. There's not even words that we say out loud to people. We say them out loud in our minds, and that judgment happens in our minds, and our hearts get hard. And we come to these conclusions and we step into the role of God as if we can see their hearts. And he says, stop judging that way. Stop judging that way. Oh, we have to be so careful. That measurement that we hold up to others is going to be held up to us by other people around us. And ultimately by God himself. He'll just like, if this is how you want to measure others, let me measure you in the same way. It's so easy, isn't it? It's so easy. All it takes is for someone to be different than us. A different look, a different sound, a different style. And then we can turn into what Ray Pritchard calls spiritual vultures. That's just such a really interesting picture. Think about that. Spiritual vultures taking great satisfaction in circling around what we perceive as somebody else's fault. And all we're doing is just circling around their fault. And this is what we live for, is to find faults and circle around people's faults as like vultures. And Jesus says, this is not how we're supposed to be. Stop judging this way. Stop judging this way. Jesus clarifies even more what he is concerned about in verses 3 through 5. Look what he says in verses 3 through 5. He says, why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but don't notice the log in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, and look, there's a log in your eye? Hypocrite! First take the log out of your eye, and then you'll see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Oh, you want to know what clarification is in regards to what Jesus means in verse 1? Here it is. Here it is, right? He's talking about, man, we get both clarity and the remedy in this, and the remedy to deal with it at the same time. He's saying, look, you do a whole lot of vulture circling around the perceived faults of others, but I don't ever see you circling around your own stuff. I don't see you circling around your own stuff. And you get this this look that you give to other people, right? It's what it says. It says, why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye? That word look is this constant look. It's not a glance. It's not this short little thing. It's this ongoing, sideways, look down your nose look. And you just stare at it. Keep looking at it, keep looking at it, keep looking at it. He's like, you're so focused. You're so circling around that person's fault, that speck. You're so caught up in the speck in someone else's eye, but you neglect the 2x6 that's sticking out of your own. That's that binocular syndrome thing. We focus in and blow up the speck, the fault of our brother, and do nothing about our own sinfulness. And Jesus has a word for people like that. What is it? You can say it. Hypocrites. It's okay to say it in here. We're a church full of them. I am the chief. I was like, I feel like it. It's like, I get it. When we do this all the time, and Jesus uses this word, hypocrite. That's a hard word, isn't it? If you look through the God's word at the times Jesus uses hypocrite, and they're not pretty times. And he's usually going after the Pharisees, right? Those religious leaders. And I imagine there maybe were some in the crowd as he was speaking. And so he calls this as he sees it. He calls them hypocrites. He sees the kind of judging going on, and he sees this great discrepancy in the people who are judging. He looks in, and he sees the judging they have, and then he also sees the condition of their heart at the same time. And the only word that the king, the master, Jesus, can use to describe it is hypocrite. It's hypocrite. To me, I remember this time, it was like... it's a long story. I don't have to go into all the depth of it. But when I was a kid, we had this event, youth event, over the summer. We called it Weird Week. It was awesome. Loved it. But one of them was this kind of fight night where you had water balloons and flour and all this kind of stuff. We had tug of war, and it was tug of war. Trying to pull people through the mud pit. As you probably are, maybe you're shocked by this, but I rarely won tug of war, ever. And so I always came out just muddy, covered in mud, toe drug through, and you know, and part of that's the fun. And you come out and you're just covered head to toe in mud. How ridiculous would it be for me to, in that condition, just covered head to toe in mud, to see somebody who has just a little speck of mud on them and say, oh, you're such a filthy slob. You got to clean up your act. You go out like that? That's horrible. Covered in mud. That's what Jesus is talking about, isn't it? It's like you are making all these condemning statements in your mind and to people out loud even. You are coming to these hasty conclusions about people with insufficient information, and you don't even look at your own condition. Not even looking at yourself. Not even looking at yourself. To me, this is the key focus of the passage. Jesus says when it comes to his kingdom, there's no place for this hypercritical, fault-seeking, vulture-circling kind of condemning, that kind of judgment, especially given the condition of our own hearts. There's no place for that. Now, you might say to me, all that you have really is a speck in your eye. It's like, I don't have any of those so-called big beam sins going on. I don't have those kind of things. I'm a speck person. I'm not a log person. I'm not a beam person. I'm just a speck person. I get it. But let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you this. The moment you disregard your speck and go after someone else's, your speck becomes a beam. Your speck gride, sourced from a place of disregard, is sourced from a place of pride, sourced from a place of superiority feeling, right? And it's this picture of an unbroken speck. Spirit. And the moment we have pride in our life about who we are and we're looking down our nose at anybody else and we're applauding ourselves and condemning people around us, that little speck just blows up. It gets big. It gets big. It becomes that beam. Sin always grows in the fertile soil of pride. It always grows. So what's the remedy? Because I got to tell you, I cross these opportunities all the time. You do too, because you see people. We see people. We run into people, and the opportunity to judge happens every... You guys come here. Let's see. It's 7 o'clock tonight. You've had so many judging opportunities, haven't you? Just in your drive from your house to here. Oh, that person's driving. Oh, that, see that bumper sticker? Right? We're like, all these things. Did you see where that plate was from? That license plate there? Go back! Yeah, we have all these things, right? We judge. We have these judging things. We have always these opportunities to judge. And so what's the remedy? Well, the remedy is to first deal with our own sin. There's so much hope in this passage because left on our own, we're just going to stumble over judging all the time. But the King in his wisdom has given us a way to be able to have an accurate view of the people around us. And it starts with the spotlight on our own hearts. It starts with us looking into our own hearts and dealing with our own sin. It's about the order of things. It's to start first with the measurement of where we are in dealing with that, when dealing with what's in our own eye. It's humbling ourselves before God and with Him looking at our own heart, identifying those things, those specks, and dealing with them. Then we are in position to help our brother. Look back at what it says in verse 5. It says, "Hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Then," you hear the order? First you, then your brother. First you, but I love what it says in the middle. Deal with what's going on in your life, in your heart. Then you will see clearly to help your brother with his speck. Oh, that's what the Lord wants. There's a place for us to have these kind of discerning conversations, these accountability conversations, these moments of helping someone through that kind of judgment and discernment with one another. There's places for that, but only when our vision is clear. And the thing that messes our vision up is our own heart. It muddies the water. It blurs the vision. And so we have to deal with our own sight in order to be able to help our brother. It's the order of things. So we can see clearly. Only dealing with our own sin do we have hope to have clarity and mercy and grace to help our brother. You know, the eye is super sensitive, isn't it? Anybody here have a hard time talking about things getting stuck in their eye? Like for some people, it's like, I don't want to talk about it. I won't betray the confidence on this person. But there's somebody I was just visiting with, and he's like, I can't even have this conversation right now. It just bothers me. I don't want to talk about things in people's eyes. So I apologize if this is you, but we're talking about it. We're totally talking about it. So the eye is super sensitive, isn't it? You get the smallest thing in your eye. Think of those really small things, a speck of dust. A little eyelash, something really small, and what happens? It's painful, isn't it? You get all teared up, your eyes get all watery, you're doing this whole thing, and you're starting to like reach like this because you can't really deal with this, and nothing, you can't feel how good your hand feels because your eye hurts so bad, right? It's like it just takes over everything. That's how sensitive the eye is, the smallest thing, and it takes over. Imagine having something in your eye and going to someone for help, and they have filthy hands to paw at your face with. Come here, let me help you. Would you even do that? I wouldn't. No way. I'd be like, no, thank you. That is not for me. I am not going to do that. I'm going to go to the clean-handed person I trust who sees clearly and gently washes it out, right? I'm going to go to somebody I know that I can trust and has clear vision to help me out. When we deal with our sin, when we take that first step and we deal with our sin, then our approach to others completely changes. It positions us to judge in the right way. It makes things clear, and our approach then becomes the right approach. Why? Because when we deal with our own sin, when we look first into our lives before we look into the lives of others, and when we deal with our then when we deal with that, we can go to people with this understanding of, I know what the pain is to have a speck in your eye. I understand that it hurts. To have a speck in your eye. I the fin there was just there, and I know the freedom and the relief that comes when God takes it out. That's the approach we need to have with people. Not this sense of superiority that, man, I know and I can't believe you and ho, 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 you know, and it's like this sense of pride and I'm so much greater than you and I ignore what's going on in my heart. It's like me with muddy hands coming and pawing at your face. But when I deal with my own heart, then I have this beautiful fellowship with God. And I'm freshly reminded of his grace, and I'm freshly reminded of his mercy, and I'm freshly reminded of his forgiveness. And from that fresh reminding of all those beautiful things of the goodness of God, I can then approach somebody else, and I can actually help them with the speck in theirs. This isn't about leave your brother alone. What's going on with him is going on with him. You don't need to judge. This is about judge here, and then from that clean place, help there. That's what this is about. That's what this is about. Dealing with our sin breaks pride, and humble hearts are the only way to approach another when it comes to this idea of judging and discerning. Humble hearts is the only way we can approach. Any other approach is an approach of pride. It's an approach of pride, and Jesus says, don't judge from there. Don't judge from that position. Paul says in Philippians 4:5, let your graciousness be known to everyone. I love that. Let your graciousness be known to everyone. And to me, that just stands in direct contrast to this condemning, morally superior, fault-finding, hypercritical judgment that Jesus is talking about here. Graciousness. How do we get greater stuff? And then his graciousness, that graciousness overflows out of us and onto other people. And like an eyewash station, it helps flood and wash stuff out. And I love that. How do people know you? What are you known for? Our passage wraps up with verse 6. And I got to tell you, verse 6 is an interesting verse, isn't it? Anybody here just like, what's that about? Look what it says again. Don't give what is holy to dogs, or toss your pearls before pigs, or they will trample them with their feet, turn and tear you to pieces. I'm like, what? How does that fit? Maybe we should have pushed that. I should have pushed that verse to Pastor Mike's message for next week so he could deal with it on his side of it. Maybe it belongs to him. Let's pray. No, it's an interesting passage, and at first glance, it just seems odd and out of place. But I think one of the things that Jesus is doing is he's giving us this other view of judgment. And he starts the part, and he says, don't judge, or you're going to be judged. And then he clarifies what he means. And at the very end, he gives us a scenario in which judgment's really important. And he gives two things about judgment. He talks about these kind of, you've got dogs and hogs. Well, pigs, you know, it sounds better. Dogs and hogs. And then you've got what's holy and you got pearls. That's what he's got, this kind of combination here. And he's like, be careful. And ultimately what he's saying is, don't give what is super valuable, that holy things, pearls. That's like really, it's symbolic of value. And really what he's talking about is the message of the kingdom, the gospel. So don't give those, that valuable thing to dogs and hogs, which in our mind, we think of Fido and bacon. But that's not what they thought back then. Dogs and hogs had a completely different connotation back then. Dogs were vicious and cruel and would bite you, and they were wild and they roamed around. They weren't pets. And pigs were seen as vile and sinful and dirty and unholy, and they would just trample things that were good. And so Jesus says, don't take what is valuable and throw it to those people who are going to trample what is good. He uses dogs and pigs as symbolic of those who would ridicule, reject, and blaspheme the gospel, who would attack it, who would be hostile towards it, and mock it all the time. And he's like, we're not to deliver that kingdom message to those who have no other purpose than to mock it and attack it and trample it. And if you look through the New Testament, you'll see examples of this all the time. All the time in the book of Acts, even in the Gospels, where Jesus says, if they don't welcome you and if they're hostile to you, you just shake the dust off your feet and keep on moving. So we see that. He says, don't give what is so valuable. And in my mind, I think, I can't escape the word hypocrites in the verses we read before. Because hypocrite attaches to some people in their midst that he's going to come again and again against, right? Those religious officials who didn't want to hear anything about what Jesus had to offer. And so here's what that tells me. This is a verse of discernment. This is a verse of discernment. And the question I come away from with when I read this is this question. How do we know? How do we know that someone's how do we know the dogs and the hogs from this moment of, is this dogs or hogs, or am I just being judgmental? Right? And ultimately, this is a hard dance to dance, isn't it? So what do we do? What do we always do? What always should we do? We go back to the King. We start with our heart. We go back to the King, and he's like, God, is there anything going on in here? Is there anything that's offensive in here? Help me deal with what's in here so that I can see clearly out there. We go back to him who knows. And when it comes to judging, really it comes to everything, but right here when it comes to judging, I think one of the things that Jesus wants us to know is that we as a people, as kingdom citizens, have to need him desperately when it comes to this. That we need to have this desperate need for him in our life so that we can understand the differences, so that we can understand what's going on in our own hearts and deal with it, so that we can then clearly help our brother that we encounter in ways that are meaningful and good and connected to the kingdom. We start first with ourselves and we pray to the one who sees the hearts of all men. Judging. You're going to run into it when you leave. You are. Tomorrow, it's going to be right there. As you encounter people, as you see people, and incidents and things that you walk through and all those kinds of things, we're going to run into it every day. And every day, we will get these triggering moments that we would want to judge and have these hasty conclusions. So what do? We go to the King and we examine ourselves first. We go to the King, we examine ourselves first, we confess and mourn and repent of what we find there, and through the filter of God's grace for us, we approach others. We come to conclusions about others through the filter of God's grace and what he's done for us. And may that bring him great glory.
Thanks for listening. If you're interested in more info, find us on the web at easthaven.org.